When it comes to our police, a new poll shows there is strong support for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Still, a racial divide. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice weekend. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast. Just download the WJCT app. Just ahead, we'll take your calls. What are your perceptions of the JSO? We're talking law enforcement this morning with UNF's Mike Bender. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, we've got a bold goal, an update on improving the health of everyone here on the First Coast. And stick around for Culpepper on last night's amazing overtime win, the first ever for the Patriots in the Super Bowl. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, we've got a fresh look at relations between local law enforcement and this community. The University of North Florida recently conducted a survey on behalf of the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and it reveals most people in the city overwhelmingly support our local police. The JSO community survey results show the majority, 78% of Jacksonville residents, approve of the way the sheriff's office is handling its job. That said, the data also shows a real racial divide in perceptions of police. Pollster Mike Bender runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab and joins us now with the results. Mike, good to see you. Thanks for coming in with a cold, by the way.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And when it comes to your perceptions of the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, as we discuss these new poll results, we want to take a poll of our listeners. What are your encounters with police like? What are your thoughts about how the JSO is handling public safety? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on our Facebook page, too. And so JSO actually came to you and asked for this survey, and they got very positive results overall.
Yeah, it's an in-depth survey. It surveyed 1,700 residents of Duval County, absent the beaches. This is only the Jacksonville's primary patrol zone areas. And we got breakdowns of each different patrol zone. There are six different ones throughout the city. So we were able to get representation and draw some inferences about the specific areas in the city so that JSO could use this information not only to shape their training, but also to go forward and improve relations in the community.
What did you find when it comes to the different parts of town, the different patrol zones? There are five of them, right?
Six. There's six. And there's the two that stuck out the most are the two that you might expect. Zone one, which is kind of the urban core, right in urban downtown. And then zone five, which is the northwest section, which includes the infamous 32209 zip code, which has gotten a lot of attention in the last couple of months. Uh-huh. Those areas were, if there were differences, and there weren't many differences across zones by and large, but when there were, those were ones where there were some differences.
Right. And so overall, the big number, 88% of Jacksonville residents say they feel safe in their own neighborhood.
Yes.
But at the same time, a lot of people in the city feel that we do have a violent crime problem, kind of a cognitive dissonance there.
A little bit. And this is, and I made the analogy that it's like, I hate Congress, but I love my congressman. And there's some of that there to it. And I broke it down. And I was looking at who was answering what to each of those questions. So about half of those folks answered identically how they feel in their neighborhood is how they feel about Jacksonville as a whole. But about 16% of the folks in zones one and zone five that I alluded to said they feel less safe in their neighborhood than Jacksonville as a whole, which is indicative of those particular areas.
And as we talk with UNF pollster Mike Bender about public perceptions of public safety in Jacksonville, we want to know your thoughts about the JSO. It's 549-2937. Now, you also asked people about their specific encounters with JSO personnel. Most said they found JSO police to be courteous and competent. That said, only 35% of black respondents agreed with that statement, far fewer than whites.
Well, it's not, it strongly agree was the 35%.
Okay.
Overall, it was at 71%, but the strongly agree was 61% for whites and 35% for blacks. Overall, it was 85% for whites and 71% for blacks. So there's a difference there. And those are a couple of the areas where you start to see differences across racial divides.
Right. And these are what you might expect. In particular, when it comes to how the police investigate officer-involved shootings, incidents where a police officer shoots a civilian, particularly an unarmed civilian. The North Side Coalition of Jacksonville issued a statement in response to the UNF survey saying that police encounters with black residents and JSO's investigation of police-involved shootings are two critical areas that deserve special attention.
Sure, and I certainly think that that's something that, that this highlights. And let's be honest, I don't know that this is necessarily all that newsworthy, but I think what is newsworthy, if you look at the nature of the media and the attention that this issue has gotten in the last year or two, I think that the number is being so high and so supportive, even amongst the black community in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. That actually caught me by surprise a little bit. The narrative that we see is it's very controversial. It's very, they're aggravated. They're at each other's throats. There's animosity across both sides of the aisle. But that's not really the case that we're seeing. There are differences, but they're not dramatic.
And why do you so that's obviously a win for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office in this era where police departments do feel as though the narrative, as you said, is strongly against them, and there's been a lot of controversy over police-involved shootings in particular. This goes a long way in Jacksonville toward bolstering JSO's position, which is that we're doing the best we can. Is that fair to say?
I think that's a fair takeaway. I think, by and large, this is pretty good. I think, and I think what's important about this, this isn't a 300-person survey. This is 1,700 people. This is an enormous survey for a community of this size. And I think it's very reflective of the folks that live here. Absolutely, are there circumstances where things can be improved? Yes. And listen, I don't want to sit here and say that the 39% of people who disagree with the fact that, you know, JSO handles officer shootings well, I don't want to say they're to be ignored. They absolutely need to have attention paid to them. And that's something that I'm hopeful that the JSO will look into in the future.
Sure. In this statement from the North Side Coalition, the spokesperson, Ben Frazier, points out that the shooting and killing of an unarmed black man, Vernell Bing Jr., is now under investigation by the U.S. Justice Department. The officer involved is still on the job. Those incidents are festering in the African-American community in this city, just as they are across the country.
Yeah, and we're hopeful that we don't see something like a Baltimore or something like a Ferguson happening here.
Yeah. And speaking of which, you also found, this is really interesting, 93% of Jacksonvillians unequivocally say they support the use of body cameras for JSO officers. Sheriff Mike Williams has been on this program and said that they're looking at it. The new Clay County Sheriff, Daryl Daniels, the first African-American sheriff in that county, by the way, they're looking at it. The public wants it, and police increasingly seem to think that it will help them prove their narrative of a controversial incident, too.
Right, and I think this is... You never see approval at 93% for anything. You ask people if they like apple pie, and you're not going to get 93%. But what I think you have here is this confluence of officers out there on the street saying, you need to see what I'm dealing with. What I go through on a daily basis, you need to be here to understand. And they think the body camera can help and aid them in that regard. On the flip side, you have potential victims of an occasional misuse or something goes bad. They say, look what the police are doing to me. Now, if there's a camera, A, maybe it'll dissuade the officer from doing that, or B, maybe it'll catch him in the act. So I think you have both sides want the video evidence to get their side of the narrative out. And, you know, there's a lot of potential problems with this as far as privacy rights and expense for storing this and expense for instituting it. But I think that's something that it's very clear that the public wants.
And whether it's body cameras or just your overall thoughts and questions about this new UNF survey looking at JSO, we want your calls right now. It's 549-2937. Peter is in Arlington. Hey, Peter. Happy Monday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I know a lot of police departments say community policing, is what they want to strive for, and I just wonder if that's still the goal of the JSO, because if it is, I think they're failing. I've been through neighborhoods that are pretty rough and a lot of rough people hanging around, and community policing would solve that kind of thing. So I'm wondering if that was touched on or if anybody has more information.
Sure. Thanks for that call.
Well, I can't obviously speak directly to what the sheriff's office is doing as far as their plans for engaging their officers and how they're interacting with the community. But what I can say is we did ask folks an open-ended question toward the end of the survey. If there was one thing that JSO could do for you in your neighborhood, what would it be? And literally across races, across patrol zones, half of the people open-ended voluntarily said, more presence, more police, more patrols in my area.
Right. And Sheriff Williams has talked about increasing that, that's something that we'll continue to hear from them about, I'm sure, how they're handling that, because clearly the public wants it. It's 549-2937. Stephen is in Mandarin. Hey, Stephen. Good morning.
Hey, morning. We've had a few experiences with law enforcement in our neighborhood of Mandarin. We live more of lower residential. We're kind of spread apart. We're not as close as some of the other areas urban-wise, but on many occasions, we've called for non-emergency type issues, and I know they're not emergencies, but it's been more than an hour for responses. And when we finally do have law enforcement on site, the interactions are kind of not really great. The customer service is really not there. We've had remarks with noise problems in the area, and that are noise ordinances there for that to be enforced, and we've been told that we should wear earplugs to block out the noise, and on another occasion we were told that they wouldn't do anything about it. So we've had to file a complaint here recently. I feel kind of bad having to do it, but it seemed like the customer service is kind of lacking there on multiple occasions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
And ironically, Mandarin down in Patrol Zone 3, generally Patrol Zone 3 has, you know, of the higher support for JSO, but of folks that said that they found JSO not to be courteous in their interactions with them, 70% of the folks in that Patrol Zone 3 said it was because they were just either rude or arrogant or unfriendly or didn't have a positive reaction to them. So I think that highlights just some of the interaction problems that you know, police and citizens need to work through. And I think that's on both sides.
It's 549-2937 as we look at UNF's new poll looking at the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Tom on the west side. Hey, Tom. Good morning. How are things your way?
Doing well. And yourselves?
Doing great.
Yep, hanging in there. Thanks.
Outstanding. My concerns with the JSO are these two. One, if they really want people to believe in their transparency, they need to restore the radios to the media so that the media can report on their activities accurately. And two, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office does not really do a particularly good job in interacting with bicyclists. And that's been my personal experience.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Yeah, what he's referring to, the two things, we'll talk about the bike issue, but the first issue, the previous Sheriff Rutherford, now Congressman Rutherford, took police scanners out of all of the local newsrooms. A very controversial move at the time. I'm surprised none of the organizations sued, actually, frankly. And then the other issue about cyclists.
Right. And, you know, what Mike Williams does and what they do with the news scanners and their relationships with the news departments going forward, you know, I can't speak to that. The survey didn't address that. But I will say this, you know, dipping in my foot into the political stuff that I do a little bit of, one of the things that Clay Yarborough, a new state legislator, has submitted in a budget request for is a fair amount of money to improve not only some dangerous crosswalks on state roads, but also some bicycle lanes and expanding some lanes for that too. So
because we're not a bike friendly city.
We're not a bike friendly city. We're not a mass transportation friendly city, but it's hard to have that when you have such a giant landmass and we're so spread apart.
549-2937. It looks as though Pastor R.L. Gundy is on the line. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a concern about the survey. I've read into the survey, and, you know, in our coalition, we thought it was somewhat suspect because the survey was requested by the JSO. Now, I believe Sheriff Weaver's attempting to do something to change some things, But until that sheriff department becomes totally transparent, especially in the shootings, the Florida Times Union clearly stated that we have a problem with racist shootings, and specifically the racist shooting black people. And until that sheriff department does something about that, and until the city gives those sheriff's department more money for these people to be more better on the street, you know, they're hurting with the money. My question is, when you did this survey, we looked at the percentage, and we became suspect because we haven't heard of anybody who took this survey. I don't know what the total amount of people that took the survey, and how many of them were African Americans when you actually took the survey.
So
yeah, sure.
So absolutely. I can't speak to Sheriff Williams, and I certainly can't speak to the TU piece on the police shootings that came out a couple of weeks ago. But as far as the methodology and the process that we went through to conduct this survey, I think that's important. Yes, JSO approached us, and yes, JSO paid for it. This stuff costs money. We have live callers calling people that we have to pay. We completed 1,700 calls. So if you look at any survey nationally about anything, except maybe in a select few, are you going to see anywhere more than 1,000 people? So we had an enormous amount of responses. When it comes down to African American content, about 29% of our respondents were African American, which is in line with the ACS census estimates for Duval County. So we had a lot of African Americans. We had representatives from whites. We conducted calls in Spanish for the Latino population that prefers to speak Spanish. Methodologically, this survey is as sound as it gets. The phone numbers were derived via random digit dial. I am an academic. I have no connection to JSO. I don't really know anybody over there. The first time I met folks was when they approached me. They gave us carte blanche to do it right. And we did.
Pastor Gundy, thanks for the call. Any further comments?
No, I just wanted to make sure we're concerned about the transparency in that JSO office.
Yeah.
And until that is done, and until he have an independent investigation of those shooters, it's never going to be clear to this community that they're being transparent.
And I think you're referring to a recent investigative story in the Florida Times Union looking at the difficulty in accessing data about officer-involved shootings.
And I will say one thing. One thing that JSO did when they came to us, they said, listen, don't sugarcoat anything, do it right, and present everything. They didn't ask us to hold anything back. There is some stuff in here that isn't great for them. And they released the entire thing. I can't obviously talk about the shootings, but as far as this goes, this is about as transparent as it gets, and this is not what was done under the previous sheriff's office regime.
Brad is on the line. Hi, Brad. Good morning.
Hey, I think I'm following up to what the pastor was saying before about the shootings. I think the JSO does a lot of do as I say, not as I do, because I know every time there's a shooting, they say, we need to break the wall of silence. We need to get the community to tell us about these shootings. Yet when it comes to a JSO shooting, they put up a wall of silence, and they don't talk about it until it's completely decided. Or, again, as I saw the same Times Union article you made reference to, I just want to know why the FDLE doesn't investigate these. It just would be so easy to go to a third party.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and this is, again, not my expertise, but I will say, as far as transparency goes, I know there's a lot of legal restrictions when it comes to on-the-job performance reviews and shooting reviews. There's a lot of legal restrictions about what they can say about particular potential defendants or at least people that are actually doing the shooting. So I know there are some restrictions legally.
And, you know, a minute ago you talked about how 93% of the people you surveyed want body cameras. And this has nothing to do with local police, but I am reminded of a case up in, I think it was South Carolina, where a bystander shot video of an officer. He tasered a man who was actually running away, and then the video showed him staging the scene afterwards. And then a jury, even with that video, did not want to convict that officer, even though there was video evidence of his guilt.
Right. And
so even providing videos sometimes, whether it favors the police or the civilian, it's not always a guarantee of the outcome the public might want.
Right, and it's not always a guarantee of anything. You can have two different video cameras from two different angles shooting the exact same thing and come to completely different conclusions. But it's certainly better than a he said, she said.
So this survey's in the field. You do surveys all the time. What's next on your plate?
So literally, we're starting up next week. We're going to do a statewide survey, getting at a lot of the policy issues that are going to be discussed as legislative session starts in Tallahassee in early March. We're going to have some results right before then.
A lot to talk there as well. I hope you'll come back for that. Always good to have you on the show. He's Mike Binder, and he runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Laboratory.
Thanks for having me.
Much more still ahead later. Culpepper on that amazing comeback by the New England Patriots as they win Super Bowl 51. Did you watch that last night? And up next, a look at a new way to fight cardiovascular disease. Back in a moment.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Douglas Anderson School of the Arts presents Extravaganza, Saturday, February 11th in the Moran Theater. A night of artistry and Broadway-style entertainment in music, dance, and theater. Tickets through Ticketmaster. Douglas Anderson School of the Arts.
WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at a fraction of their value at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins February 9th and continues through February 20th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information. Bid now. The auction continues through February 20th at 8 p.m.
We play all your favorite oldies every Monday night at 10. Join us for Route 66. Tune in, Flashback, 89.9 WJCT-FM, Monday nights at 10.
Welcome back. Well, it's the leading global cause of death. Cardiovascular disease accounts for more than 17 million deaths every year, and that number is expected to grow to some 23 million by the year 2030. About 2,200 Americans die every day from these diseases, but there are steps you can take to reduce your risk. One of them is by knowing your numbers. February is American Heart Month, and here with more, we welcome Dr. Pamela Rama, cardiologist with Baptist Heart Specialists. She's also past president of the local division of the American Heart Association. Dr. Rama, good morning.
Good morning.
And we're doing a lot this month on the show to talk about heart disease awareness. Now, you really want to get this message out. Know your numbers. And what numbers do we all need to know when it comes to our heart health?
You need to know your blood pressure. You need to know your cholesterol level. And it's not sufficient to just know your total cholesterol level. You need to know the breakdown. What is your bad cholesterol? What is your good cholesterol? You need to know your BMI, which is your weight, and whether you're obese.
Body mass index.
Body mass, yeah. That's right. And you have to know your sugar. Your blood sugar.
Your blood sugar.
Yes.
So what are the ideal numbers? What are good numbers?
So you want your blood pressure to be lower than 140 over 90, but the optimal blood pressure is really 120 over 80. Mm-hmm. You want your blood sugar to be less than 100. You want your weight or your BMI to be 25. And you want your good cholesterol to be over 45 and your bad cholesterol to be less than 100.
And if you get those numbers checked and you find that your numbers are not where they should be, which is very common for many Americans, you've got some advice for them.
Absolutely. people should remember that you can reduce your lifetime risk of developing cardiovascular disease by 80% just by implementing lifestyle changes, which is eating healthy, not being obese, not smoking and avoiding secondhand smoking, and exercising.
Mm-hmm. Easier said than done. But it is Heart Disease Awareness Month, so we really want to keep getting the message out. You know, I found out my cholesterol is a little high. I was really surprised because I eat a healthy diet. I try to work out. Part of this is genetic, isn't it?
Right.
My dad's triglycerides are a little high, so right. Did I inherit this?
Yeah, 70% of your cholesterol is genetics, 30% diet.
So you have to work against genetics sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But these lifestyle changes can do it for you. It's not a life sentence because you have a family history.
Now, in addition to all the traditional tools, you have a new tool that you want to share to find out if an individual is at higher risk of cardiovascular disease. This is called a coronary calcium score. What is this?
It is, it's been around for a long time, but now it's getting incorporated in a lot of cardiology practices. Essentially, it's a CAT scan. It takes 2 seconds to acquire. And what it looks for is calcium buildup in your coronary arteries, because, you shouldn't have calcium in your coronary arteries. Mm-hmm. If you have a score of 0, the likelihood that you will have a cardiac event in 10 to 15 years is less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So the prognosis is very good. The bad side is if you have a score of even 1, it means that you have coronary artery disease. And then you score it depending on how high your score is, your risk increases as well.
If you have a score of more than 400, you're at high risk.
Yes, the likelihood that you have significant blockages in your coronary artery disease is high.
Most people that come in for this test, though, where do they tend to fall? Maybe in the mid-range?
Yes, a lot of people. It depends on your age. So the younger ones tend to fall in the lower range. How about the older ones tend to fall in the higher range? Because, your lifetime risk of developing heart disease is 1 in 2.
Yeah, and that's the thing. People really, especially women, this message is not necessarily getting through, that heart disease is the number one killer of women. Not breast cancer and other cancers, it's heart disease.
That is true. And even if more women realize it, only 13% personalize it. So they think that, it's not going to happen to me, it's going to happen to somebody else.
So eat right, exercise, lower your cholesterol, know your numbers, consider a coronary calcium score, that's a CT scan of your heart. Now, Baptist Health has also joined with the American Heart Association for a Little Hats, Big Hearts campaign. What's this all about?
So any child that's born at any of the Baptist facility gets a little red hat if they're born in February.
Oh, very nice.
And that's really to raise awareness for the mothers, too, that the number one health risk is heart disease. And, the parents have the biggest influence in steering their children to the right heart healthy habits.
That's great. And it's so good to talk to you. It's a message that can't be repeated enough. February is American Heart Month. So as Dr. Rama says, know your numbers. Get tested. And if those numbers aren't where they need to be, make some lifestyle changes. Get your heart healthier. It's the only one you've got. Dr. Pamela Rama, always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Rama, she's a cardiologist with Baptist Heart Specialists, past president of the local chapter of the American Heart Association. And speaking of health, in a moment, an update on Jacksonville's bold goal to improve all of our health. That's next.
To the rock and sound. You're moving to the rock and sound.
On the next Fresh Air, the demise of an all-American factory town. Brian Alexander takes us to Lancaster, Ohio, where Wall Street investors bought the plants and workers' lives changed.
This is not the way they were told the system worked, and so it left them incredibly disillusioned.
Alexander tells us what happened and why many there supported Donald Trump. His book is Glasshouse. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On February 14th, the full Jacksonville City Council is expected to take up a controversial change to the city's human rights ordinance. Join WJCT for a live, interactive, televised discussion on February 8th as a panel explores the division over the expansion of Jacksonville's human rights ordinance protections for the LGBT community. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 8th. Community Thread, LGBT rights on the First Coast.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, it's called a bold goal to improve the overall health of Jacksonville by 20%, and there's a deadline, the year 2020. Humana set its bold goal at a clinical town hall last November. So what's happened since then? We're going to find out as we welcome Laura Nolan, Health Solutions Executive, and Dr. John Montgomery, Vice President, both with Humana Florida. Good to see you both. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
All right. So at the town hall in November, Laura, you launched the bold goal to radically improve our local health. There are some major barriers: diabetes, food insecurity, behavioral health, access to care. You sort of identified those major challenge areas back in November. What's happened since then?
Well, Melissa, we really got a sense of what the health state of Jacksonville looks like at that clinical town hall. And I think there was somewhat of an awakening. We had so many different organizations, nonprofit, private sector, and certainly our hospitals and providers all in attendance at that large clinical town hall. And I think it was really acknowledged that what we need to do is we need to keep the people at our core focus. If we're going to improve their health, we need to see what they're struggling with. And you just mentioned it, food insecurity, diabetes. There's a couple mental, behavioral health, a couple of key issues that kept popping up over and over at that clinical town hall.
Dr. John Montgomery, so we have a better idea of our major barriers to better health in Northeast Florida. Now comes the hard part, right?
Right.
Tackling them.
Yeah. Actually, and it's exciting time, too, because we're bringing together all those individuals from that clinical town hall who actually wanted to be involved in our event tomorrow. So tomorrow we're having our big health advisory board kickoff. It'll be taking place at JU, Davis College of Business, or School of Business. And it'll be an exciting time tomorrow from 1 to 4 p.m. And we'll bring these individuals back together, and we'll do what Laura was just referring to, is that collective impact to really address the issues that we're seeing in this community.
So tomorrow you'll get everyone together to develop an action plan, actual goals for reducing some of these barriers to better health for people. How challenging do you think that's going to be? You have to get everyone on the same page, and we're talking all sorts of different community stakeholders, people from hospital systems, political people, other CEOs around. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in this.
Yes. Well, tomorrow our goal is to really foster collaboration. And Dr. Montgomery just mentioned collective impact. We're going to keep our core focus of the Health Advisory Board meeting tomorrow around those principles. So keeping people at the center, focusing on both physical and mental health conditions, and partnering with multiple organizations. Tomorrow, so far, we have over 100 people that are going to be in attendance at JU, and that represents more than 57 different organizations around Duval County.
Is it, and people can still come out to this, or is it sold out?
Oh, very well, they can still come out.
People can still come. This is tomorrow at JU, kicking off at 1 o'clock. And, of course, the clock is ticking for this bold goal. You've set a deadline of 2020. You have 3 years to meet your goal of improving the health of this city by 20%. Doctor, how are we going to measure whether or not you've met that goal?
Well, it's really exciting. We've been using the CDC's Healthy Days measure, and how many days in the last 30 days have you been physically or mentally unhealthy? And so that's our benchmark. We're going to use that to really drive the movement and the success. And to your point, Melissa, clearly those individuals getting together tomorrow will bring together that kind of, you know, action plan to really say, okay, this is what we want to do in this community, and then this is how we're going to measure it through CDC's Healthy Days measure.
And Laura Nolan, this is being done in other Florida cities as well. Is that right?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. Broward County, down in Tampa. We just had a regional meeting with the entire state in Tampa last week, bringing it together. And they're already beyond us. So they've had a year, 2 years in, and we've really seen some significant impacts in those cities.
What are we seeing in Tampa and other Florida cities? If they're farther down the road, what can we hopefully look forward to?
Well, in Tampa, food insecurity is one of the number one issues that we've seen there. And we have a collaboration between USF, our local physicians, and then also
Feeding Tampa Bay
in Tampa. And together they have been collaborating over the year to really do a couple things. They're having the physicians identify if their patients are food insecure. So often historically the patients were treating a diagnosis, whether it be a depression or diabetes, and they weren't realizing that their patients weren't getting a meal or a healthy meal a day. And so now they're encouraging physicians to identify that right away when they're first screening with a new member, and then working with the different resources in the community to make sure they bring food and healthy meals to them.
The issue of food insecurity, I don't think we've talked about it a lot on this program, but it really can't be stressed enough. I don't think people realize how big of an issue it is in Northeast Florida, how many families are suffering from food insecurity. They're not necessarily starving to death, but they don't always know where their next meal is coming from.
Very much
that
so.
Is a real issue for many thousands of people in Northeast Florida.
Absolutely. And the stigma associated with that is significant as well. So fortunately, we've been able to partner with MCCI here and Feeding Northeast Florida to address food insecurities in this area by using their well over 6 or 7 of their sites as food distribution centers to be able to address those issues. And oftentimes, as a family physician and doctors in general, we give patients medicine and we oftentimes say, take with food, but I'm not aware of the fact that people are food insecure. And unfortunately, it's a challenge for us.
Another big issue you identified, diabetes. How is the bold goal going to reduce diabetes as a health issue in this area?
Well, one of the things that the subcommittees will come together and do, and the team of individuals, the leaders in this community, business and health leaders, will really say to ourselves tomorrow, what components of diabetes do we really need to focus on in this community to make an impact towards improving that 20% by 2020? And it may very well be screening. It may be hemoglobin A1C testing. It may be amputations in a community. Hopefully, collectively, we as a group tomorrow and throughout this process will be able to decide how we're going to drill down on that particular disease, because as you all know, it's very significant.
Is it more significant in Northeast Florida than other parts of the country? How severe a health issue is it in our area?
Well, I would say, and just putting in scope, as we shared with you before, Humana's rolled this out into 8 communities throughout the United States. And in some of those communities, like San Antonio, Texas, where we originally launched this in 2014, diabetes was a major component. So, Melissa, I'd submit to you that throughout all these communities that we've seen throughout the United States, diabetes is well at the number 1 to number 3 ranked issue that we're seeing throughout the country.
And I'm interested, too, in how you're going to look at the issue of mental and behavioral health and access to care. Access to care, people having barriers to health care. With everything in flux now when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, how people will access health insurance, how can you plan and look ahead with all of that uncertainty that's happening right now?
Well, certainly. We've been taking a look at that here locally. That also popped up at our clinical town hall.
Yeah.
And I recently read the Clinton Foundation survey where they noted that here in Jacksonville, especially in certain counties, we have a significant lack of providers for mental and behavioral health. So we are going to make that a key issue tomorrow, but we have also learned from some of these other cities that are working on the bold goal, and some of them have even introduced telepsychiatry. So similar to telemedicine, where somebody, if they're at home and they need immediate access to care and they don't have the means to drive or have the time away from work, that there is opportunity out there to expand that care beyond the traditional in-office setting.
Very much so. Yes, and I would say the same. And I think we realize over and over again the whole issue of access as it relates to primary care services integrated with behavioral health services. So one of the things we'd love to be able to do is integrate mental health, behavioral health with primary care clinics more so, so that there's a better smooth transition and awareness of those two conditions together. Melissa, as you know, as we talked about diabetes, that stigma of mental health and behavioral health within our communities, we're going to be addressing. We're going to address that through education. We're going to address it through access. We're going to address it through more awareness. And discussions like this are going to help us do those sorts of things.
So again, if you're just tuning in, as we give you an update on Humana's bold goal, the goal to improve the health of Jacksonville by 20% in just a few years, by the year 2020, there's a new Jacksonville Health Advisory Board looking at this, and they will meet tomorrow at the JU Davis College of Business at 1 o'clock. And the clock is ticking, 3.5 years, something like that. But thank you so much for letting us know an update on the bold goal. And we so appreciate you being with us this morning. Keep us posted.
Yes, and thank you for having us.
Thank you, Melissa.
We were joined by Dr. John Montgomery and Laura Nolan, both with Humana. And in a moment, Culpepper on a record-setting Super Bowl in more ways than one.
After the election, are you fired up or burned out? Some of you told us a bit of both.
I feel a little fatigued, but I also feel very empowered with everything that's been going on.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, we'll take your calls on what this moment means for you and for America. Do you feel like tuning out to save your sanity, or is this a moment you are determined not to miss? Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Would you like to influence history? I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Senator Bob Graham and attorney Chris Hand, who offer practical advice about creating positive social change in their new book, America, the Owner's Manual, You Can Fight City Hall and Win. We'll discuss an 1860 libel case and Civil War monuments. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
For everyone creating their own life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. Sponsored in part by AARP Real Possibilities.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport. WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at a fraction of their value at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins February 9th and continues through February 20th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information. Bid now. The auction continues through February 20th at 8 p.m.
Well, finally, this hour, a record-setting Super Bowl in more ways than one.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper.
And Cole, what a game as the Patriots beat the Falcons 34-28 in overtime.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, it was a remarkable game in so many ways. Early on, it looked like the Falcons had just run away with this one. They were up 21-0 in the second quarter, but New England found a way, mostly making their way back to a tie ball game in the fourth quarter, including scoring back-to-back two-point conversions after touchdowns to tie the game at 28 and send it to the first-ever Super Bowl overtime. Tom Brady was just fantastic, setting a Super Bowl record for yards passed in a Super Bowl game. And in the late fourth quarter and overtime, it was vintage Brady as he led the Patriots to 31 consecutive points, including the one and only drive in overtime that resulted in a touchdown run to win it for the Patriots. Now, I will admit that at one point, I was starting to wonder how this game would impact Tom Brady's legacy. He struggled a bit early, but I think we can safely say that his legacy is more than safe now. He led his team back from 25 points down in the Super Bowl. That's never been done before. Brady's five Super Bowl rings as a starting quarterback are the most in NFL history. That surpassed Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw. And he was named the Super Bowl MVP. No coach had won five Super Bowls. Now Bill Belichick has. And one bit of history that did stand last night. No regular season MVP who has reached the Super Bowl had ever won it. That string is still alive. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan won the award on Saturday night. And last night he watched as Brady led a comeback for the ages. It was such a big comeback. Get this. With 9 minutes left to go in the game, these analytics engines that take into account game stats and data and past performance and everything else had given Atlanta a 99.6% chance of winning. So we're looking at a 4 in 1,000 kind of chance for the Patriots to do what they did. Brady was emotional after the game. At one point, kneeling down on the field, surrounded by security and PR men and media. This one clearly meant a lot for him, with his mother fighting a serious illness. Brady said he wanted to win this one for her.
Now, you talked last week about what this game would mean for Tom Brady's legacy. Where do you put him among the greats?
Well, I think you have to say that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback in the history of the National Football League. The regular season stats are there. The postseason success is certainly there. Five Super Bowl rings, one for each finger on one hand. That's never been done before. So, you know, I probably would have put Joe Montana as the leading guy before this. Certainly some would, you know, would say you have to consider John Elway or might go back to Johnny Unitas. But I think at this point you have to say that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and he's got the hardware to prove it.
All right, that's football, and you also have some soccer news for us.
Yeah, that's right. The Armada have released their preseason schedule, which includes a couple of preseason matchups against in-state teams from the rival United Soccer League. They'll face off against the Tampa Bay Rowdies as well as Orlando City B, the second team to Orlando City. They also have preseason matchups against JU, UNF, and Flagler on the preseason schedule. I would expect that the regular season schedule will come out this week, perhaps as early as today. We could also find out this week where the Armada will play their home games this year, something that's been a little bit up in the air this offseason.
Culpepper, thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member, sign in, and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download our WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, a look at what this moment in America means to you. Are you feeling fired up or burned out? That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. On tomorrow's show, we continue our look at the opioid epidemic. A very interesting and actually very disturbing problem with opioids in this country. Both the nation and the First Coast seeing a surge in pregnant women addicted to opioid medication or illegal heroin or fentanyl, giving birth to babies in severe withdrawal. We're going to tell you how this is impacting health right here on the First Coast and what physicians are trying to do to ensure healthy moms and healthy babies. Give us an email right now with your thoughts about the opioid epidemic for tomorrow's show. It's firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and we'll try to get those emails on tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.